All right. Well, it is 1 minute after 11 now, so we probably should go ahead and get started on this program.
Well, we're going to have an intimate group this morning, it looks like.
It looks great.
I mean, either I overwhelmed everybody with too much information or the weather's just too nice. So
I'll vote for the latter.
But I wanted to just mention at the outset that that was a lot of information last week. I apologize. It was a little bit more than I realized. But this week, it's your turn to tell me what you think you ought to be doing, we ought to be doing, how we make this change. So today, it's really more, I want to hear from everybody else. So with that in mind, I want to start by just asking a question of everybody, you know, for those who were able to join us last week, what were your actions? What did you observe that was surprising or inspiring or made you worried? Just go ahead and share. We can do this, they call it popcorn style. We are probably one of the highest concentrations of Teslas outside of places like the Bay Area. And now Texas actually is a real, has a lot of Teslas as well. So, when you go to other places, you realize that there just aren't any electric cars. And I'm talking about the United States. Remember, it's very different in other places around the globe. In fact, in Norway now, remember, it's the majority of new car sales are electric vehicles. Yeah, the tools for finding stations where you can charge are pretty good. You can, I think with Google Maps these days, you can do a route and then ask it to display where the charging stations are along. So you can do some planning in advance to answer the question, will it be easy to make this trip if I have to stop and charge on the way? Well, let me, for those who weren't able to join us, just briefly recap what we learned. And what we talked about most of the time was the fact that we today have all the tools we need to radically reduce our emissions. We know what we need to do to drive emissions to zero. This challenge has been studied by the best minds, mathematicians, statisticians, economists, scientists, and these are the things we have to do, this list on the left. Reducing our energy use per capita, especially in places like the United States, generating clean electricity, and then electrifying most energy uses. Those are some big steps, and I've highlighted them in green here because not only do we already know how to do them, but we'll save money when we do these things. I shaded the electrify most energy use differently because it's kind of hard to make a blanket statement about this. In the case of electric vehicles, it's already cheaper over the lifetime of the vehicle to than an internal combustion engine vehicle because it's so much, it costs less to fuel them and it costs a lot less to maintain them. But in a couple of years, as batteries continue to climb, they'll be cheaper initially as well. It's not necessarily true for example, replacing natural gas as your home heating fuel with electricity. That is probably going to cost you right now and you won't make it up by savings in your energy bill. So the prices need to come down for those tools to make it immediately beneficial for you. The next couple of things we need to do are, we understand how to do them technically. We don't yet know how to do them very cost effectively. So like we know how to make fuels that are liquid that don't emit greenhouse gas emissions, things like hydrogen and biofuels, but it's expensive and we don't have the supply chains built out yet so that we can reliably get large quantities of those fuels to where they're needed. So things like airplanes remain a really big challenge for us. We can't yet fly an airplane with zero emissions. Sustainable aviation fuels are just hard to get. Switching to low carbon materials, you know, replacing the current cement and steel with new formulations that don't have such high emissions is something that we know how to do technically, but we don't have the big factories and all the companies that are involved in distributing these in place yet to do it at any significant scale. And then I put enhancing our natural carbon sinks as something that we do know how to do it, but it's not something we can get paid to do right now. It's not going to save us money. If we're going to try to make our forests healthier, we're going to have to spend the money to thin them, and we're going to have to and protect them from fire. If we're going to stop, using up peat bogs for things like peat moss, that's going to cost us money right now. The last one is one that we have to do that we don't yet understand how to do very well, and that's to create artificial carbon sinks. So there's a lot of science yet to be done and engineering work to be done. But the overall picture is really clear. Well, we have all the tools we need to solve this problem. And if we do spend the money to do it, it'll cost us less than it cost us to fight the Iraq war. In fact, if we could factor in all the health improvements that would come from better air quality, it would probably benefit us immediately financially to make this transition. So that poses the hard, question, why aren't we doing it? Why aren't we doing it? We have all these things we can do. Why aren't we doing them? So I wanted to spend a day mostly puzzling on that challenge and getting you to, because you're all very well educated and have thought a lot about these issues, and I think you know most of what you need to do to become part of the solution to this challenge. So I thought we'd talk about that now. So I'm going to get out of the full screen mode so I can take some notes. So what I wanted to do next is simply ask you, again, popcorn fashion, or you can use the raise hand feature, and Susan's going to help me because it's a little hard to see everybody while I'm taking some notes here. But if you can just tell me the things you know about today that you could do, and let's try to break them into two categories. One is that it doesn't cost very much or take much time, and the other one is that, yeah, it's a big commitment, either financially or in terms of your time. So what are the things that come to mind? All right, well, these are definitely all good. Let me share with you a list that I've kind of compiled over time, having studied this issue a bit, and see how it compares to what we talked about. So here's the list that I'm aware of, and I did number them approximately in the order of their impact. So one of the things I noticed about your list is that without a little bit of further development, you didn't think about just things that stop burning gas or oil or, what we call natural gas, which isn't really natural, fracked gas. We just have to stop burning those things because that's where the emissions come from. So anything you can do that results in less energy being used, because a lot of it still is, even if it's electricity, it comes from fossil fuels, or less burning of fossil fuels. That's what we have to really focus on. So that's why you'll see at the top of this list, flying less and driving less are the two biggest ones that you can do. Most people aren't aware of this, but I ran the numbers once, and if you take a family of four to Hawaii for a vacation, you create more emissions than using your car and driving it 12,000 miles in a year. So that one plane flight kind of undoes, amounts to an entire car's worth of use for a year. So we don't think about those kinds of things. But if you can, for example, take shorter flights, we've done this recently before we started thinking about this. We were taking the kids to places like Italy and New York and Hawaii, and now we've done more trips to Colorado or Alaska. These are regional trips, so the amount of flying is less than half. So those two are really should be at the top of everybody's list. There's another one that if you haven't done it yet, I encourage you to just do it next weekend. Go around the house. If you find any incandescent bulbs, They're very inefficient. And if you replace them with LED light bulbs, you immediately make everybody better off. If you have halogen bulbs, it's a little bit more complicated, but I think it's simplest to just say, just go do this now and do it everywhere. The third one is changing our diets. This has just got huge ripple effects. I think you probably know this, but just didn't. I mean, some people have talked about it before. Is this one somebody's already trying to do? Yeah, I think you've pretty well summarized two things that are really significant about this dietary change. One is it's generally better for our health. The second is that it's not all that hard to do. And there are a lot of great recipes. I used to be one of those people who thought, beef is what's for dinner. And then I realized that there are lots of things you can have for dinner that are equally tasty and a much better source of calories. I was reading a book recently where the science on this shows that it takes 6 calories of energy to feed cattle and create a calorie that you ingest by eating, some beef. Whereas for fish and chicken, it's more like 2. So it's way more efficient to eat other sources of protein than beef. And then ultimately, of course, we need to move towards a lot more plants in our diet. I was glad to see that you came up with buying less stuff, because this is one that is really quite important that most people just don't think that much about, because they don't really, they aren't aware of the fact that there's fossil fuels used to make everything we buy almost. And some things much more intensive than others, but it's in there. Eco-driving is simply using the brakes less and keeping your tires properly inflated and then getting a regular tune-up so you're being as efficient as you can with the car you already have. Electric vehicles are a lot more efficient inherently. You get more miles out per unit of energy you put into it. So I'd say you've got probably half of these. So I think it's good that you've been thinking about and trying some of these things. I think you might be able to try some that you haven't yet, or shift your priorities a little bit and have more impact. And these are all easy to talk about because they just are habits for the most part. I don't really think there are very major sacrifices required to do any of these things, or even a lot of resources required on our part. Thank you for bringing that up, because you're getting a little ahead of us. I meant to say earlier that today we're going to talk about this in 3 parts. We're going to talk about what we can do, what we control these as household managers first, and then we're going to talk about what we can do as a congregation, as a faith community, and then time permitting, we'll talk more about what we can do as citizens, voters, either at the local, state, federal levels. But that is absolutely critical. Now, on the ones that take significant time and money to do, one that I would encourage you all to do just as soon as you can is to maybe have someone come in and do an analysis of your house. And if you haven't done this, you might have some surprises and might find some things you can do that would be really productive but don't cost all that much. So this is something that might cost several $100. When I had it done, I think it was $400. And what they do is to create a partial vacuum in your house by blowing air out of it and sealing up where air comes in. And they use that to find out how tight your house is. And then they can go around if there's a temperature difference between the inside and the outside that's significant, which there is in the winter. They go around with a camera that's a thermal detection, and they can find out where cold is coming into the building, for example, in the winter, or the opposite, heat in the summer, if it's a lot hotter outside. So there's some tools that they use that you can't, you can't do this yourself. I mean, you can check for big, leaks of air if you feel a draft, but these tools are pretty helpful, and it doesn't cost all that much to get it done. Another one that's pretty approachable is replacing your water heater. Mm-hmm. This is something you have to do on occasion. And if you switch to a heat pump water heater, that's really beneficial right now and doesn't cost that much. Some of these others are pretty big investments. The switching to an electric vehicle, that's the big one if you drive a car a lot. Mm-hmm. And switching to off natural gas is the huge challenge that we all have to tackle. And that one is absolutely more expensive and more complicated than anything else on this list. Were there any others on this list that take more time and money that you had questions about before we move on? Yeah, so, you know, one of the things that you can do, since you can't eliminate your emissions completely in the way our lives work these days, is to measure your emissions and offset what you can't eliminate. And what I mean by that is effectively pay someone else to do it for you. And that could take the form of giving a stove that's really efficient to someone who today in some third world country is burning trees to try and heat their dinner. That in itself would improve their air quality a lot, as well as use a lot less fuel and therefore generate less emissions. So there are things like that you can do that are more philanthropic. The one that I personally have been using to neutralize our carbon impact as a household is to pay farmers to store more carbon in the soil. And for farmers, that means making some changes in their practices, like having cover crops on the field year-round and not tilling the field as much, very little, which sometimes requires that they get new kinds of equipment to plant and harvest. So there are expenses for them, and to make those, to switch their behavior, I'm actually subsidizing what they do. And I do that through a Seattle company called Nori. If you go to nori.com, you can learn more about the programs they have to help farmers change their practices in ways that put more carbon in the soil. Well, let's talk next then about what we can do as a faith community. And I want to do the same kind of exercise. You know, part of let's add a little structure though to it. I know that you know, a congregation is also kind of like a household manager in that they have facilities and they have things taking place in those facilities that require the use of energy and resources. So you can think about a number of the tools we just talked about. They apply here as well. But then the difference, of course, is that you're a much larger group, and there are things that you could do because you're a larger group that would be really beneficial, and you want to be able to help each other out. So give some thoughts to those different kinds of approaches. So what are the things that you can think of at St. Andrews that you think that you could do that would help reduce the impact of the congregation as a whole? So if you think about that list we were just looking at as households, are there things on that list that you think need to be investigated for the St. Andrews congregation as well? So far these things are all about the facilities. What else can we do to make a difference as a congregation that isn't just about the facilities? But what I'm kind of fishing here for something that hasn't come up yet, which is St. Andrews is what? Okay, let's say 300 households. 300 households vastly overwhelms the impact of what is frankly a pretty tightly managed facility. Although, you know, there could be some investment made that would help it reduce its use of energy even further. What can we do about the 300 households? I've noticed something sometime within the past year. Caring for creation is in the weekly prayers. I'm not sure it always was, or at least it's more explicit than it's been in the past. That strikes me as one of the things as a, you know, pray about it more. We're a faith community. That will hopefully cause people to think more about what they can do and what their responsibility is. I'll put that on this side because it would require some people committing some time. I think these are all excellent. And you know, I think the thing that we should take away from even this, what's 5-minute exercise, is that there's a lot we could do and we could do it together. The facility itself, the big change would be to replace natural gas with electricity as the fuel you use to heat and cool the buildings and the water that you use in the buildings. That would be the big one. And that would be somewhat expensive, but as part of a study about reducing your impact, I can remember talking to the, oh, I've forgotten her name now, but she's the synod or regional synod head. It'll come to me. But in any case, she told me that as part of the change with the Grace Lutheran transition, there were some funds that had become available as grants to individual congregations. That was pre-COVID, so it's probably might have been used by now. But I think my point is simply that we might, if we were focused on it, we might find sources of help to make some of these upgrades that would be needed in the facility, because replacing the furnaces with heat pumps would be a big upgrade. That would be a very significant thing. Well, my advice is to focus on anything that burns fossil fuels. That's where you got to go first, because that's the problem. In a nutshell, that's the thing we have to stop doing to avoid catastrophic levels of climate change. But a lot of these things that we've talked about are definitely supportive. And I've noticed that in past workshops I've done is that people here in this region in particular, and maybe it's the country as a whole, they do think a lot about recycling. It's top of mind. It's right there. Whenever you ask about reducing emissions, people always talk about recycling. The fact is that that's a relatively small contributor to the global warming crisis. And I wouldn't, you know, it addresses another crisis we have, but and materials use, but it in terms of impacting global warming, it's a pretty small impact. The one you need to go after is anything that burns fossil fuels. Do less of it or replace it with electricity. Those are the two things you can really think about. Wherever you see fossil fuels being burned, whether it's gas or oil or, you know, gasoline for cars, any of that, that's where we have to really focus our efforts. Well, I think we do have some time to talk about what we can do as citizens, because this is something that's becoming more and more important for us to think about. Let me get to that next here and ask a question again of everyone. What are the things you think you can do that would have impact that either don't take much time or money? We'll put those on the left side, or, you know, might be a pretty big investment. What are the things that are top of mind for you? The drawdown project is something that I encourage you to go look at. If you haven't yet, you can go browse the website at your convenience. There's also this really beautiful coffee table book that they created. But they went out and got a whole bunch of subject matter experts, PhD scientists, et cetera, and asked them to analyze the best 100 solutions to the global warming crisis. And they analyzed all sorts of things and tried to figure out how much it would cost, how much impact it would have, and what the benefits would be to us and what those were worth. And it's really encouraging. And the two of the most important things that we could do in terms of their impact are, was let's see, it was Educate Girls. That was, you know, globally. We're talking globally. Educating girls can have one of the biggest impacts for the very reason that you just brought up, Tom, which is that they can then go on and to have fewer children. And I'm trying to remember the other part of this, which was more about, well, I think it was basically providing loans to women to enable them to start businesses. Those were two of the things. And when they do that, when they're running a business, they're less likely to have more children. So both of those things tended to result in families being smaller. But in general, that's not our big problem right now when it comes to global warming. It's not the numbers of us. It's the amount of emissions each one of us, particularly in wealthy nations, are producing. You're going to hear right now, as the talks in Glasgow, Scotland, what they call the Conference of the Parties 26 or COP 26, you're going to hear a lot of posturing about how India needs to do more or China needs to do more. But the fact is that per capita, people in India produce about 1 metric ton of emissions per year, and Americans produce 19. So trying to ask the Indians to do more is nuts. I mean, it's just not going to help. They can't cut their emissions much more. What we can do to help them is to help them bypass fossil fuels entirely. There are several hundred million people who in India who have no source of energy at all. They don't have an electrical grid. We could give them solar panels and they would be better off and they wouldn't burn wood. You know, they could start cooking with electricity. There's lots of things they could do then that would help them keep their emissions low. But the fact is wealthy nations are going to have to step up to the plate and do a lot more. So that's why the notion that we need to have a lot less people will take pressure off, no question about it, but it's the amount that each of us are currently producing in terms of emissions that's a problem. And we don't solve that. It doesn't matter if our population would have to fall by, just think about it this way. If everybody keeps doing what they're doing in terms of the amount of emissions they produce, there would have to be half as many of us to get to our goal. And that has to happen in 8 years.
That's not going to happen.
That's not going to happen. So the real is really on us. Back to this list, then. What are other things that come to mind that you can do? You as an individual can do as a citizen. But I can assure you that when phone calls happen, when you flood the lines of your elected officials on some topic, they hear you. They do. All of the contacts do get logged. The systems that I've had opportunities to learn about are good enough that they know how many people call them on any given day, and they know what the issues are that they're calling about. So your voice is getting heard, even if you can't really feel it because you didn't get someone on the other end of the line acknowledging it. Petitions, not so much, but the contacts from a constituent now where the form has made you put in your address and they know this is someone in their district who's contacting them, they hear that. They, of course, are way more impressed if you try to meet with them. That really gets their attention. So meeting is with your elected officials is obviously the most impactful form of contact that you could have, especially if it's with a group. So they know you are many and you all feel the same way. You may have, as a Bellevue citizen, received opportunities to answer surveys about this. If you go look up on Bellevue's website, you'll find sustainability as something that they have lots of plans about. They don't have a lot of action is the problem. So that's where you have to get involved and hold their feet to the fire. Make them accountable. So I'll just leave you with that, and I don't want to belabor that, but let me share with you, because we're getting on in time here, a list of things that I've observed that are quite specific that you could do. I mean, these are feasible. And the first one, if you joined us in 2020, I guess it was now, we modeled motivational interviewing and how to talk to people about climate change. But, you know, this is not so hard anymore. The thing that most people don't realize is that the vast majority of Americans are either alarmed or very concerned about climate change. The press gives a lot of attention to people who are deniers or whatever, but they're vanishingly small in number. We mostly are worried about this problem. What we aren't yet, we haven't yet taken the step of getting into action. We worry about it, but we don't do anything about it yet. We talk about voting for climate champions. That's easy. That means you just have to do a little research when you're voting and try and understand what their positions are. The other thing I've gotten a habit of is just calling a member of Congress occasionally. Takes a couple of minutes. There are tools that organizations like Citizens Climate Lobby have that make this super simple. They'll even ping you on your cell phone, tell you it's your turn this month to call, and then you go to their website and they'll give you the script and give you the phone number, and in 15 minutes you're done. So it's really quite efficient to do. And you can do the same thing with your state legislators. They want to hear from you too. And, you know, city council meetings are always open. You can go and stand up and ask a question. And it's a good thing to do to have them hear from you. Again, especially if you come as a group. That gets their attention. And then lastly, there are a lot of people who are working hard every day to try and influence policy. And they need our financial support. It can be at a small level, $100. You know, can if it's consistent, can be meaningful. Or if you have the means, you can be investing thousands of dollars. So I put that on both sides of the ledger here. It can be something you do in a small way or in a large way. You'll notice that what I list on the right is just a repeat on the left, but it involves doing it as a group. And that has so much more impact. There's one thing that you could do, it's pretty easy to do this, is join every year the Washington Environmental Council sponsors a day where at Olympia, where they have everyone come in and meet with their legislators. And so they organize, do a lot of the work of organizing things for you. All you really have to show up and tell them where you're from, and they'll put you in a group and tell you what, you know, the priorities are that we're trying to get accomplished as a environmental community in Washington, and that session of the legislator, and you can go join a group of people to meet with your legislators. I moved my voter registration from Bellevue to Leavenworth in 2017 because I felt like I felt what I was going to feel locally because my legislators more or less agreed. But now I have reason to talk to legislators who don't agree necessarily or don't make it a priority. Some will say, oh, I completely agree with you. This is a very important problem. And then they don't do anything about it. Or they vote against everything that comes up that would actually do something about it. And that's because they don't hear from people who care about this issue enough. So I moved my voter registration. I don't know if any of you have property in red counties in Washington. It's very simple, since you pay taxes there, to just go to the Secretary of State and move your voter registration. And that would change your situation significantly. But most important thing here is to recognize that if you do this with other people in an organized group, you're going to have a lot more impact than if you just occasionally, out of frustration, get online and fill out a form or make a phone call. So that's where this kind of doubles back to what you can do as a congregation, because one of the things you can do as a congregation is get organized and start asking for our officials to treat the planet like it is God's creation and needs to be cared for. All right, I'm going to get off my soapbox now. You know, if anyone is interested in doing more and wants to get organized, I am happy to support you in that and make some suggestions or point you to information that I think is good quality and helpful. So feel free to ask, as I'm saying. There's one thing I want to leave you with before we close today, and that is that there is a surprising amount of consensus on the fact that we need to do more. And there is a lot of polling that suggests that majorities of both Democrats and Republicans, these are registered voters, would agree that we need to do things like fund public transportation at higher levels or provide funds to make our buildings more efficient, give tax rebates on cars and solar panels and on efficient appliances. Now it starts to get a little more, there's a little less support amongst some Republicans, but the younger Republicans are fully committed to requiring corporations to disclose their impact, the emissions that they generate through the products they make and the activities they conduct, to regulating carbon dioxide as a pollutant like other pollutants. And there's one that's not on this list because it's right on the edge, and that is putting a price on carbon emissions and giving the money back to households. That has wide, very high levels of support amongst younger conservatives in this country. So there's a surprising amount of room for agreement. It's not to say that the priorities are the same. These are not things that, for the most part, Democrats and Republicans can agree on how important they are, but they do support this action being taken. So that gives, you know, gives me reason to believe that there's room for legislation here that would address some of these things and advance some of these solutions. So it's not futile. We're not hopelessly divided. There's a lot more attention given to the divisions because it gathers more eyeballs. It's more shocking or controversial. But there is a lot of room for us to come together around some things that would really make a difference. So I think our time's up today. I want to leave you with something you can put on your refrigerator. Two things. You know, one is there's a couple of numbers here, and I'm just going to ask a question. Does anybody know what these numbers are and why I put them up?
We have to cut our carbon emission in half by 2030.
Yeah, that's the thing that's really come together in the scientific community in the past 5 years is a much better understanding through tons and tons of research about how important it is, how little time we have left and how close we are to tipping points on some really severe damage to our global climate system that will be very, very hard to undo. So the urgency of making these changes has increased a lot in the scientific community amongst the past 5 years. And then here's the reason for the last 50% number, and nobody, I think, really is aware of this. When we say reduce our emissions 50% by 2030, that still only gives us a 50% chance of avoiding catastrophic levels of climate change. Yeah, it's we're in a bind, and we need to really come together to get out of it, which is why I put the last statement up there. We absolutely have all the tools we need. We just have to go further, faster, and do it together. And I hope, pray that some movement towards doing a lot more together as a global community comes out of this recent, conference of the parties proceedings. But even if it doesn't, there's so much we can do as a congregation, as a city government and members of, or you know, residents of Bellevue, as residents of the state of Washington, and we can do a lot at those levels as well. So even if we can't make progress at the federal levels, we can do this from the bottoms up as well.
Jeff, thank you very, very much. As always, you are an inspiration and make me think of think of ways that I can help and wish I could do more. Thank you, everybody, for coming today. Let's say a short prayer. Dear Lord, thank you for minds like Jeff that can see the big picture and make suggestions to us. Dear Lord, help us take care of this wonderful world that you gave us. We haven't done a very good job, but we've still got time if we get moving and go further, faster together. In the meantime, go forth, love and serve, and take care of your people. Amen. Have a great day, everybody.